the artist, the artiste, or the artisan? Which one defines the master surgeon? Hey, it's Marco Pelosi III, and this is the Top Cosmetic Gynecologist Podcast. Well, let's flesh out the mushy nuances. An artist, a true artist, perceives and feels elements of their world and releases those perceptions and feelings through media. Is that what a master surgeon does? Nah, not even close. An artiste is an entertainer. They sing and dance and act, repeating material created by others, perhaps by artists, but not necessarily. Is that what a master surgeon does? I really don't think so. That leaves us with the artisan. You thought they only made cheese, beer, and fine leather goods. Well, guess again. Master surgeons are artisans. Every last one of them. An artisan is a skilled worker that uses their hands to produce something functional or something that will enhance something else. Now, that's what a surgeon does, and a master surgeon does it better than anyone else. Some might take offense that I neglect to mention the many years of ego-boosting, straight-A test-taking prowess. And I would fire back violently that no test in the history of this species has ever forged the mind-body connection that is the essence of surgical mastery. So, how do you make a master surgeon from scratch? It's simple. You go medieval. The medieval guild established the blueprint for master surgeons the same way it produced blacksmiths, woodworkers, and jewelers. The medieval guild featured three levels of expertise: the apprentice, the journeyman, and the master. The apprentice learned the craft. The journeyman worked in the trade, and after years of experience and completion of an approved masterpiece, a journeyman could become a master. The term guild derives from the Anglo-Saxon root geldan, which meant to pay and contribute. The noun form of geldan meant an association of persons contributing money for some common purpose. The root also meant to sacrifice and worship. Later, the German meaning of guild as referring to gold continued to evolve into the idea of a collaborative gold standard of excellence. All of these meanings carry the idea of worth, a price that you are willing to pay for excellence. A guild carries this idea of costly worth within a collaborative community. It took years of disciplined effort for the apprentice to become a master. And once he had achieved this level, he often had to pay a fee for the privilege of belonging to the Guild of Masters. But it was worth paying for, as only the proven best, the gold standard of artisans, could belong to the guild. You could say that my guest today has recently joined the Guild of Cosmetic Gynecologists. And I invited him to share the story of his journey and of his transformation. His energy and his drive are infectious and inspiring, and you are in for a treat. But before we start, you and I both know that a very special virtual cosmetic GYN two-day cadaver course is on the event horizon for November 6 and 7 and that VIP shoutouts will be delivered at the end of today's show, and that you and your loved ones can attend this majestic event from the comfort, the safety, and the convenience of your home at iscgmedia.com/awesome. Hey, it's Marco Pelosi III, and I'm here on the Top Cosmetic Gynecologist podcast with Dr. Michael Reed. Now, Dr. Reed is someone who practices in Northern California, and he has joined the practice of Dr. Michael Goodman. And he has segued from standard OBGYN practice into cosmetic gynecology. And Michael Goodman had reached out to me and said, you got to talk to this guy. He's got a great story. He's really motivated to get into the biz. And long story short, couple of emails. And I said, hey, I know that guy. He picked up Dr. Goodman's award at the meeting last year when he couldn't make it. I'm more than happy to have you, Michael. Thank you for taking the time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to actually sit and talk with you. I mean, like you said, I kind of met you first at ISCG, and just listening to you and your talks as well as your podcast are amazing. I've learned so much, and it's just a real honor and privilege to sit and chat with you.
Well, sure. Now you can tell Michael Goodman that it took him 8 decades to get on the podcast, and you got on it in a matter of minutes with a couple of emails.
Man, when someone pays the path for you and helps you out, those are the cool things that happen. And so I'm eternally grateful to Dr. Goodman for how he's helped me in the process.
Now, tell me how you got to meet, how you two met.
Well, it's a kind of a convoluted story. You know, I really met him basically trying to do my first due diligence of, you know, educating myself about what cosmetic gynecology is. But if I went back a little bit further in time before meeting kind of Dr. Goodman, it was a real interesting time in my life. I was recently remarried. She's a beautiful girl. She's probably 18 years younger than me, and so I'm lucky in that regard. And I had lost 100 pounds because I had a kid, and I had another kid on the way, and feeling real good. And so I wanted to get abdominoplasty, and I wanted to do it in Beverly Hills because, hey, that's where everybody goes supposedly for great cosmetic, cosmesis. So I, you know, went there and saw the plastic surgeon, had the procedure, and I was empowered. I mean, I felt like amazed. I felt the top of the world, and I was telling him, I said, man, this job has got to be so rewarding to be able to help people that with these different issues that they may have and helping them with their something like this in gynecology. And he goes, have you ever heard of David Matlock? I said, no, I haven't heard of David Matlock before. And he says, well, the building you're standing in, he owns, and he's a gynecologist, and he does a lot of cool stuff. Why don't you go check him out? And so that was my first, you know, time I ever heard of David Matlock.
Right.
So I get on Instagram, I go to YouTube, Facebook, Google, and I find out about this guy. This guy pioneers these procedures. He does a whole bunch of other procedures, and I'm like, this is amazing. I mean, as a gynecologist, you can do all this stuff. And then the biggest thing was that he was a black guy. And the thing is I'm a black guy too, and I'm a gynecologist, and I'm like, my goodness, this is something that I could really do.
Right.
And yeah. And so also during that time, you know, I've been an employed physician for about 18 years. And being an employed physician, I was busy. I was doing anywhere between 250 to, you know, almost 300 babies delivered each year, and I was working harder and harder, and they were telling me I was going to make less and less, and it was getting harder and harder as I got older to get out of bed and deliver these wonderful babies. I'm so appreciative of all that opportunity to deliver babies and take care of women, and that's all I've done in my life. But being an employee physician was killing me. I had two children at that time, and I just don't know if I could continue to get up in the middle of the night. So I looked more into this cosmetic gynecology. I sent email to Dr. Matt Locke's people who do the educational aspects of his practice and, you know, offers teaching. And in the meantime, I was getting on YouTube and just trying to learn more and more, and I fell across ISCG, and I was like, what? There's a, you know, Society for Cosmetic Gynecologists? And I saw, yeah, and so I saw a talk. It was vaginal laxity, and I think it was given by a Dr. Marco Pelosi, and I was just amazed at the things that were discussed. And then I'm a gynecologist. I haven't even asked my patients about, you know, what's sex like? You know, is it good? Is it bad? Or do you have any concerns? You know, as a gynecologist, you know, you're doing the pap smear, you're taking care of fibroids, you're dealing with ovarian cysts, but you're just not inquiring enough about these other important aspects of life. So I find the Pelosi Medical Center, and I find the cadaver course, and I'm like, okay, maybe I can do that, because I haven't heard anything from Dr. Matlock yet. So I email you, and you're like, sorry, class is full. It's a wonderful class, and sign up for the next one. It'll be in a few months. But in my mind, I had kind of like a timeline and as to how I wanted to go about doing everything. So I found Red Allenside's course, Troy Halperin's, you know, course on teaching. And I'm looking at those things, and I happen to pick up a little throwaway journal, and there's Dr. Michael Goodman in there teaching labioplasty and vaginal plasty. And it was perfect timing, as far as when I could take time off from my employee physician to go to his course. It was all about timing, and it just so happened because I was going to go to either one of these places that offered this kind of education, but Dr. Goodman's course kind of came at the right time. So went to the course, had the course, learned so much, learned about labioplasty, vaginal plasty, how to talk to patients, what patients to watch out for, the different anatomies. And so I go back to my office with this kind of information, and I start looking at patients a little differently. And, you know, I was busy. I, you know, did robotic hysterectomies, probably two majors a week and a few minors per week, and, you know, delivering babies. And I had a couple of anterior posterior repairs, and I wanted to try a little bit of this stuff I learned from Dr. Goodman. And as you know, most of us all start off, you know, in the hospital, under insurance, and we're kind of learning. And so that's kind of what I did with this posterior repair. Did a little bit of the plication of the vaginal muscles. Wasn't very aggressive as I am now, because, you know, more timid back then. And sure enough, at post-op, you know, they come back and everything's cool. They like how things are looking. And then a few weeks after that, she comes into the office and she says to me, I don't know what you did, but sex now is totally different. I feel my partner like I've never felt before since having children. And it was just a really rewarding, process to go through. And, also I was at the conference, Dr. Goodman talked about ISHWISH, which was International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health.
Right.
And went there, loved it, learned a whole bunch more, and found out a little bit more about compounding and learning about hormone replacement therapy. And it was then that I was real committed to the idea of transforming my practice from general gynecology to cosmetic gynecology. And so I started looking at, you know, competition in the area in Omaha. There was none. I mean, the closest next person that was talking about labioplasty had to be 300 miles, but it was a pretty conservative area. Midwest is really conservative, so I was concerned about that. And I'm doing education and reading more books and listening to podcasts, listening to, you know, any and every opportunity to learn more about this I was taking. And so as I'm getting closer and closer to pulling this idea off of transforming, I really thinking to myself, you know, social media is a real big thing with this, about your ability to grow. And then how do you deal with the patient when you are taking them away from insurance and having them to pay cash? And so you have to know how to interact with these patients, and it's got to be a little bit different than dealing with insurance patients, because they're, you know, you're taking them away from their insurance and making them use money out of their back pocket to see you. So I decided, let me call Dr. Goodman and ask, can I just follow him around for about a week and just kind of see how he does stuff? He says, sure, you're going to pay a little bit, but, you know, education's not free. And so I pay a little bit, come out for a week. At the same time, I also contact the plastic surgeon who first told me about David Matlock and ask, can I kind of follow him around to see how he does things and how he works his social media? Because, I mean, he had a lot of followers, you know, 50,000 plus followers on Instagram, and I was one of them, and I wanted to know how he did all that stuff. So I come out to Dr. Goodman. He teaches me more stuff about compounding, more stuff about female cosmetic surgery. I go and visit the plastic surgeon there. He shares with me the whole setup on how he does his social media, who he hires, what kind of camera I should get. You know, this is a ring light. This is how you want to do things, and just really gave me the lowdown scoop. And I'm back in Omaha at this point now. I'm really ready to pull the trigger. And I get a call, and it was on August 2nd. Reason why I know August 2nd, because August 2nd was also my birthday. And, right, he calls me and he says, hey, I've never met a guy that has this much interest. You know, I had seen you. We hung out at Ishwish. We talked, drank. You were picking my brain back then. You paid a little bit to learn some more education from me. And he's like, you know, I'm getting older. I'm going to be leaving my GYN practice. I'm still going to do cosmetic gynecology, but I've never done this before. But have you ever thought about joining up, do a little bit of a fellowship, and then take over the gynecological practice and build your own cosmetic practice? And needless to say, that's where I am now. That's kind of like the background of how I got out here with Dr. Goodman and doing this fellowship and also starting a new practice here in Davis, California.
That's quite a story. You're a go-getter.
Yeah, you have to. You have to get after it. If you want it, you got to get after it.
That's the mindset that we see all the time in this specialty, because it's a young specialty. You really need people that have confidence, but they're motivated. They're go-getters. You know, it's not going to land in your lap. Nobody's going to just come over and say, here, learn how to do this. You gotta chase it down. I give you a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, thank you.
What did it feel like transitioning? Was there any, I mean, you're joining an established practice, so it's not like you're just putting up a shingle and hoping that if you build it, they will come. How long did it take you to feel confident just looking those patients square in the eyes and saying, here's what it costs?
Wow, that was tough. I mean, that was a new deal. You know, you're telling someone several thousand dollars for a procedure. And I think being around Dr. Goodman and kind of watching him interact during his consults, how he has everything set up, I just pretty much modeled the same thing. So I don't talk a lot about price with the patients. I leave that more to my office manager. Before they come to the office, our office manager, Nicole, kind of gives them a really good idea about how much things are going to cost, She kind of really does a real good job at introducing the practice. And so I don't spend a lot of time on the financial part, but I do, you know, tell them that, you know, everything that we do here is under local anesthesia. It's out the door pricing. And I just kind of focus on the advantages of working with me versus working with, some of the other, surgeons out there in their communities.
Right.
So that's kind of how I've handled that.
So this was like a renaissance, I guess, for you, because it started out with your personal body contouring procedure. And you have the new you. You're a completely different guy than you were a couple of years ago.
Right, right.
How does your family, how did they take this whole transformation? What was their reception to this?
My wife has been amazing through this process. I mean, she's been supportive of me in so many different other changes that I've gone through. And she was with this transforming procedure. She was with me. She stayed with me for the 2 weeks we were in Beverly Hills. And, you know, she was skeptical. And she, when we were talking back and forth with Dr. Goodman, my wife and I, we flew up again to meet him again, and she wanted to meet him and wanted to make sure this guy was nice and look at the office and kind of look at the opportunity and, you know, talk about these things. So she also made some big sacrifices. I mean, in Omaha, we owned a home. We had a 5,000 plus square foot home, big swimming pool in the back, movie theater room, well established in the community, and she had to make a sacrifice. We all did. And now we're in Davis now. We're in like a 1500 square foot home. We're renting, and we're on top of each other because there's only one and one half bathrooms. And so we have been making a lot of sacrifices. She has been making a lot of sacrifices, but she also has been quite helpful in the whole process of helping me to kind of grow the practice. So like some of the things that she's done is looked at all of the plastic surgeons that are in from the Bay Area to north of Sacramento and figure out which ones did labioplasty and which ones didn't. She looked up compounding pharmacies and, so that I could get pamphlets out and let them know that I do hormone replacement therapy. So it went from a lot of sacrifice to a lot of teamwork. And the other craziness about all of this is that we're doing this right in the middle of a pandemic, right when it started. And so she has been on board. She has been a partner in this whole process. And we're making sacrifices, but we hope sooner than later we'll reap some good return on our investment.
Well, yeah, I mean, with the right mindset, which you clearly have, I see no reason why it would turn out otherwise. It's just you got the goods, you got the right stuff. Now,
thanks, man.
you're welcome. What is currently your favorite aspect of the cosmetic gynecology?
As far as procedures, my favorite procedure is vaginoplasty. Or pelvic reconstruction. I mean, I think that that procedure for me, you know, restores form, function, and pleasure. And it can be so dramatic for the patient to look down, see themselves like they haven't seen themselves in a long time. You know, no bulging, no rectus seals bulging out. And now sex is like, wait a minute, I haven't felt like this in a long time. This is amazing. I love that procedure. One of the coolest things that I've learned from Dr. Goodman is being able to do that procedure under local anesthesia. So I have never done a vaginoplasty since moving to Davis in the OR with anesthesia. And I've done, and for 6 months, I think I've done pretty good. I've done somewhere between eight or so vaginal reconstructions. and all of them under local. And it's, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I can. There's not that many people in the United States that can do that kind of procedure that deep in the vagina, all under local anesthesia. So that's my favorite procedure.
Unless you've seen it done, it's hard to believe that it can be done. But as people who do it all the time know, it's just another thing that you do. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Now, how did you wind up in Omaha? Because you grew up in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, Southern California. Grew up there, 18, and I wanted to get away from the rules of my mom. You know, I grew up in a single-parent home. It was just my mom. My mother was a teacher, and she taught grades third and fourth. And she has been a she didn't retire, but maybe 10 years ago. She's like 74 now, 75, but she was just retired. And so she had a lot of rules. You know, being a teacher, she had a lot of rules. You got to work hard. You got to do this. You got to do that. And you have to be something in this world. You always got to work hard. And things are going to be tough in your life, but you got to bounce back and get back up. So it's not about how many times you fall down. It's that you get back up each time. And so I was tired of hearing all these rules. And so I wanted to get away. And my high school was a Catholic, all-boys Catholic high school. And Creighton, well, that's where I ended up going, Creighton University would come out to my high school and recruit. And my mother saw the pamphlet one day in my book bag about Creighton. And I had no idea. I really didn't want to go to Creighton. I wanted to go somewhere, you know, like Georgia or Washington, D.C. I just wanted to get away and see snow. And she, you know, she made me apply and pay for all the applications for college. I had to, you know, use my job money to pay for that. But she paid for Creighton, though. She said, I'm going to pay for Creighton. And so she paid for it because she knew I didn't really want to go there, but she paid for it and made sure I sent everything in. And sure enough, they gave me the best financial aid package out of all the places that I applied to and got accepted. And we drove from California to Omaha, Nebraska. She dropped me off at Creighton. She visited some of her family and friends because that's where she grew up, and left me there. And I had been stuck for almost ever since. So that's where I started the whole medicine career, was at Creighton. And then, you know, I worked hard. I received a presidential scholarship, so I didn't have to pay for medical school. The scholarship paid for medical school. I just had to take out a loan to live on for living expenses. So it was a good thing for me to get pushed out into Omaha. It saved me several hundred thousand dollars too. So
I'm sure it did.
I'm kind of grateful to Omaha.
So So how did you like Omaha? Was that a place that you said, I'm going to stick around? Or did you say, you know what, I can't wait to get out of here and somewhere else?
Well, initially when I got to Omaha, I couldn't stand it. It was so small in comparison to Southern California. There was, back in those days, there was minimal concerts that were going on. You know, the closest amusement park was 2 hours away. You know, I couldn't stand it. But then I had kids, and with my first wife, I had kids, and I said, well, this is a nice, calm place for people to raise kids, and my practice was growing. And so it's kind of like Omaha just grows on you. Next thing you know, your children, you know, longer cheering for the UCLA Bruins, you're cheering for Go Big Red Nebraska, you know. So I mean, Nebraska just kind of grows on you. It's kind of like a weed, just kind of grows. And next thing you know, you're just there, you know, you're in Omaha. And so I never thought I would get back to California, but I knew I didn't want to retire in Nebraska because it's so cold when the winters come. There's so much snow when the winters come. And so I wanted to go somewhere. I was thinking Las Vegas maybe. But again, the opportunity in Northern Cal came up, and I said, wow, I'm actually going back to California. So that's kind of my thoughts on Omaha.
Yeah. Now, how did you decide in med school that it was going to be OBGYN?
So that was pretty easy. It come down between family practice and OB. Family practice, I felt like you knew a whole bunch of everything, but nothing real deep on anything, you know?
Right.
And then on top of that, it was pediatrics, man. Pediatrics killed me. I mean, I got so sick on that rotation. And I mean, if you don't, you know, the parents bring their kids in and snot's everywhere, boogers are everywhere. And if you don't say, oh, that baby is so cute, come here, honey, and tickle it and hope you don't get sick, you're not a good doctor. So I looked more at gynecology and obstetrics. I could use my hands. I could be a surgeon. You know, you had to be a little special to get into OBGYN. And I love reading about it. I'm real good at, you know, interacting with patients. So it gave me kind of that continuity. I also felt that I was an expert because they could come to me with a specific problem. I could outline a plan. We negotiate and come up with a solution and actually fix the situation. So that was it. That pretty much was signing the deal for me as far as being a gynecologist and just delivering babies. I mean, that is just such a special moment, to intimate moment that you have with husbands and wives, and just to, you know, sometimes the dad is crying, you know, family members, grandma, grandpa's crying in the background. It's such a happy, momentous occasion. I mean, you gotta love it. And so that's where my heart is. And that's why I picked OBGYN.
That's great. That's great. It does burn you out, though. It's sort of like being in the NFL. You know, you can only play for so long before you fall apart.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, because it's labor and delivery. I mean, there is labor to it. I mean, there's some work to, you know, being an obstetrician gynecologist. I mean, you know, you're getting up in the middle of the night, you come in for a delivery, you think it's going to be normal, the baby starts not cooperating, are you putting forceps down, are you rushing back for a cesarean section? I mean, it's crash burn sometimes, but it's so exciting. But that can be taxing. That can be hard. There's no question about it that could be pretty difficult to do and sustain for a long period of time. And I was real busy, so yeah.
Right. Now I'm on your website, drmichaelreed.com, and it looks pretty slick. Who does it for you?
So that was a company called Social Media, Omaha Social Media. But that website, it must have taken, I looked at probably hundreds upon hundreds of websites. And for me, for my website, there was a few things that I was looking for. I mean, I wanted, you know, the color scheme that I picked. There's like purple, black, and gray. And I, you know, purposeful, you know, black color is kind of more professional. Purple is kind of royalty. You know, the R is my logo that's kind of encircled, is kind of like a crest. And so all these things lead, you know, to more of a elegant type of presentation. And I also wanted my website to have, and I think it's important to have a lot of videos and pictures, you know. 70% of the population, as you know, enjoys looking at videos and pictures. There's only about 30% of the population that prefer to read information. So I think giving your potential clients videos, pictures, gives you the opportunity to be able to allow the customer to see and trust their physician before they meet you. You know, I also thought that I wanted to have this chat on there. So I have this chat box on there, and I may not chat. I actually do the chatting myself right now.
Really?
You know, there's artificial intelligence. Yeah, there's artificial intelligence that you can use to answer the questions. But I try to answer them myself. I'm not super busy, but I answer a lot of the chats myself. But the cool thing about having the chat, whether you're able to answer, whether or not you have AI or not, is you capture phone number and email. And so every person that comes to my chat, whether I can get to them or not, gets a personal email from my office manager introducing the practice and telling them, you know, thanks for checking out our website. And, you know, if you want, we can talk more. And if you're interested, I mean, I will call that patient that evening after 7, around 7 p.m. I'll call the patient and talk to them in general terms just about for, you know, 10 minutes or so. The longer, a little bit better, because I'm most likely to get them to come into the office for an official consultation. But, you know, I think it's kind of like, you know, you get on the internet and you're looking for a ladder and you find the ladder that you want, you're ready to purchase, right?
That's right.
So if they're on your website and they want to chat with you, I mean, they're really looking to purchase. So that's where I've come up with that concept of sending the email. I try to chat with them myself, and then I try to have a conversation, 10-minute conversation, and just kind of go over things in general terms. And that's been really helpful. And I think it's kind of a neat touch. It's kind of like when I emailed you about, you know, your cadaver course, I didn't expect to get an email from you personally, but I got an email from you personally. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
He actually, Dr. Pelosi is emailing me back. And so that was a real neat touch. And I kind of used that with my own practice. And so that's kind of how I got that idea of calling them, talking to them for a few minutes and just trying to get them to come in. So I think you got to have all those things. You want good colors and meanings for those colors. You want videos and pictures so that, you know, that's where how the majority of people like to interact with social media in their handheld device. The chat is great at capturing phone numbers and emails. And then obviously you got to have links to your Facebook, Instagram, Real Self, YouTube. And, you know, I think that a lot of guys and girls that are going into cosmetic gynecology, they're in their late 40s at this point, and they're not really in touch with how people shop for physicians nowadays. And so I think website design, you need that. Social media, though, I mean, you really have to work real hard at getting information out there and getting your voice to be heard by many through social media, because, you know, the older folks going into, you know, mostly have Facebook only if they have something, and they're going to have to really get to learn other platforms like Instagram and Snapchat. And I think those are important steps to really kind of get the ball going for you as you're starting off this venture into cosmetic gynecology and leaving general obstetrics and gynecology behind.
Yeah, really, it's a buyer's market, and they're looking. It's not like they are just taking whatever is on a list of providers from an insurance company's policy. They're looking for a service, and they want to connect with the person behind the service. They want to see your face. They want to hear you.
Yeah, so much so. Yep, I totally agree with that. It's all about seeing you, trusting you before they come in to make that appointment nowadays, you know?
Yeah. So. Now, how many patients, like if you had to just say roughly percentage-wise, meet you first online before they actually meet you by any other channel?
What do you mean, like meet me on social media or YouTube or those kind of things?
Well, yeah, somebody's got a consultation Monday morning with Dr. Michael Reed, and the first thing you ask them is, how did you hear about us? And they can say, we had a conversation over your website, or my friend had some work done.
A majority of them end up finding my Google ad, okay?
Yeah.
I put the Google ad out. They end up hitting that. Then they go to the website, and they find that there's a lot of information. I'm on there talking, and, you know, there's videos of different procedures on there. And they then go to Real Self and look me up there. They see that I'm verified on Real Self, and a lot of them then will make a consult with me at that point. But I would say the initial one that they're hitting is probably the Google ad. That's where the majority of a lot of traffic is coming through.
So you've been advertising on Google ads for a while, or is this something that started more recently?
No, I did that from day one. Day one. Google ads from day one.
That's great. And who helps you with that? I mean, I'm sure that's like a full-time job, getting the keyword analysis and targeting your markets.
Yeah. That's Social Media Omaha. They do everything. They did my website, and they do my social media, and they put together my Google ads. And so, social media posts, they send them to me via email or between Google Drive, actually. You know, I approve them, make changes, make suggestions, whatever I feel, and then send it back, and then they post those. I meet with Shane. He's the owner of Social Media Omaha. And we meet up at least every 3-4 weeks and just talk about analytics and, you know, what words should we use and, you know, hashtags, should we change any hashtags and, you know, all these kind of things. And so they do all my work for them, but I'm really involved in like how I want to be presented, what hashtags we use. My wife is really savvy with that. So she usually comes up with a lot of the hashtags that we should use. And she also is an administrator on my social media platform. And so she also, you know, likes local businesses, and local businesses generally follow you back. And she also, they have these mom groups on Facebook that, you know, these moms get together and they talk about everything. I can't believe some of the stuff they talk about on there. And when she ever has a chance, she puts, you know, someone makes a comment about leaking, you know, she then has an opportunity and she'll post something about the practice and how we might be able to help with urinary incontinence. So there's all kinds of avenues that you have to kind of be aware of to try to get that practice going, I think, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm on your about page now, and I just scrolled down past your picture. Is that your wife surrounded by like 1,000 kids?
Yeah. Yeah, I have six kids, man.
Now, the little one looks like a newborn, like a one-year-old.
He's not even one yet. He's just turned 11, and he'll be one in about 17 days.
Well, congratulations.
So, yeah, thanks. I got six kids. I never would have thought I had six kids. But
now, who's the oldest? Is that your son holding the other baby?
Yeah, that's my oldest. He's 22. He's just hanging out in Nebraska trying to do some renting and selling homes and that kind of stuff, real estate. And then my next daughter just started college, and she's in Arizona, doing college in Arizona. And then my 17-year-old is a senior in high school in Omaha. I didn't want to pull her out and bring her out to California. She didn't want to leave her friends. Her mom is decent enough to take care of her, so she's staying there. And then I have my next son, Michael Jr., and he just turned 4. And then I have Miles. He's a little over 2. And then Marshall. He'll be 1 in 17 days. So we have a busy house, and we're living in 1,500 square feet. I know I brought that up again because it's been tough. but it'll pay off. But so we're just rolling all over each other, and with COVID and lockdown, I mean, that was crazy in itself too. I think we're all closer. It just kind of depends on your attitude. I think if I didn't have this practice that was trying to grow, I might be going nuts now. But we've just really worked together, my wife and I, and you know, just teamwork on getting this practice to grow.
Right. Now during the COVID, were you guys shut down, or were you just on like a skeleton crew, just doing a little bit here and a little bit there?
Yeah, it was exactly that. It was a skeleton crew. We had everyone in the office still to this day are wearing masks. We still use hand cleaning, hand sanitizer. We would take temperatures. And we probably only very, very few patients would come in. But we did a lot more phone consults. But at the same time, as we've gotten to understand COVID a little bit more, and not so fearful of it. A lot of people are taking advantage of this time to get these procedures because they can recover at home and still work and not lose money. So these patients are getting real savvy with this COVID and working at home. So lately, I would say the last 6 weeks, seen a little bit of uptick in the number of consults that we're getting.
Yeah, I was just going to use the same word because myself and a lot of other people that are in the biz have noticed this huge uptick. And it's all what you just said. It's that people now can earn money from home while they're recovering from a procedure. And the companies have made it possible because they wouldn't do that before. You have a lot of tech sector people, business, financial sector people. Their job is a computer. So if that computer is on their lap,
right.
It doesn't matter where their lap is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, case in point, my son.
Yeah, so it's awesome.
My son is down in South Carolina. He's a freshman, freshman in college, and his girlfriend from New Jersey flew down there, and she's doing virtual high school from down there. You know, much to the chagrin of my wife, but. You know,
I bet.
Yeah. But yeah,
but
this
going
is
to high school in South Carolina, huh?
This is the new normal. You know, you can be in the doctor's waiting room and you're conducting a business meeting. So if the doctor says he's going to be late, you don't mind.
We had one patient. We were doing the procedure, and she says, "Hey, never mind me. I'm just going to be answering emails at work. So if I kind of huff or make a little noise, it's just me answering emails." And she just worked while she was having a vaginal reconstruction. It was crazy. But yeah, everyone's getting savvy, this new world that we're in. I do miss some of the old world, you know, being able to see a smile, give a good handshake, get a good hug too, you know, miss those times too.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, eventually going to soften up a little bit, I'm sure. And I'm sure some people will never get over it. Just like there's still people worried about the Great Depression. Among the older population, they've just been permanently, you know, shell-shocked.
Yeah, crazy.
All right, Michael. Who are your role models? Not just in medicine, but in general. You know, when you look up to people and you look at people from the past, the present, you know, who inspires you?
Well, the first person that I think of when I say that inspired is, okay, so I never knew my dad, but I have a really good, my best friend, his dad was a dentist. And so he was the first black professional that I ever met. And he taught me so much growing up and was with me through undergrad, with me through medical school, and with me for a little bit of time in practice and residency. And, you know, he passed. And so all the lessons that he taught me have been with me. He's someone that I look up to and have always looked up to. Other people, I would say, in the field, I think I haven't really met him, but I think Dr. Matlock was at least a nice visual reminder that I too can do it. And I really look to support from my wife and just talking a lot of things out and grinding it out. I mean, the next person I really think of is a great friend. His name is Luther, and we've been friends for 30 years, and we talk. And then my younger brother, wow, he's been a good inspiration. We're 10 years apart, and we're good friends, and there's some really neat things about him that I like, and I try to model behind. So there's just a lot of people that I've kind of come to, you know, really enjoy and have had an impact in my life. I mean, obviously Dr. Goodman and how he, you know, interacts with people, how he interacts with me, the things that he's taught, you know, those things are priceless in my mind. And those are probably the people that, you know, I really look to inspire me. My kids, you know, they push me too. I want to be around for them. I want them to have a great life upbringing. And so that's kind of where I am. Yeah, that's who does it for me.
That's fantastic. I love that you're going to meetings and you're getting out there and you really really into this stuff. It's really nice to see. You know, it's actually taken hold and taken root, and people are really transforming their lives and the lives of a bunch of patients who, you know, they don't have access to this stuff anywhere else. They don't really get support for these things anywhere else.
And I think, you know, your program that you have up there, I mean, like I said, I know Dr. Hardis, Mona Hardis, and, you know, the program that you have at the Pelosi Center and all the amazing opportunities that you have there to take advantage of. I mean, people have to really look that up, and they have to look and see about coming out and visiting with you and learning some of these techniques. You know, I'm hoping to come out and do liposuction and learn that from you. But the people don't know. I mean, they know now, they got to know now that your spot is awesome. And it's appreciated.
Well, thank you. All right, Michael, I think we've had a phenomenal little chat here. I think that a lot of people are going to meet you and say, hey, I want to talk to that guy about how he's doing this, this, and that, because it's the starting up, the pains and the bumps of the practice, not of the guys that have been established, but the people that are going through it right now that are the most relevant, because that, you know, it's the here and now, it's the condition and the environment of now that they have to deal with.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I would love to talk to anybody. Anybody can reach out anyway. They can email me at drmichaelreed@drmichaelreed.com. Phone number is 402-616-5811.
All right.
I mean, I'm here.
Put it out there.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time, man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity again, Dr. Pelosi, and I look forward to seeing you soon at ISCG.
It's my pleasure, and see you soon.
Yeah, talk to you later.
Bye now. Well, it's the end of this episode, and you know what that means. It is time once again for you and your privileged ears to bear witness to the ISCG VIP shoutouts to the only two surgeons on the planet who will accompany the master surgeons of the ISCG one-on-one on November 6 and 7 as we educate, inspire, and inform a virtual global audience through an unprecedented surgical cadaver course in cosmetic gynecology. Welcome the one and only Dr. Jeffrey Durgan, MD, from Texas, Fellow of the American College of Surgeons, Fellow of the ISCG, General Surgeon, Cosmetic Surgeon, and Veteran Trauma Surgeon of the United States Army with two tours of duty in Iraq and a two-time recipient of the Army Commendation Medal. Welcome Dr. Jamil Raymond, MD from Florida, Master Urologist and member of the ISCG with over three decades of experience as one of South Florida's top surgeons. See you there. Over and out. Share this podcast and this website and this blog with the people in your life who you feel would benefit from this information.